This is the Dig Your Dream Podcast. This is the Dig Your Dream Podcast. This is the Dig Your Dream Podcast, the official podcast show of The Guy in the Tie. I'm your host, Ray Digby, and this is Dig Me Discussions, our weekly interview series where we introduce you to a passionate personality and share their story with the hopes of leaving you both inspired and motivated to get out there and dig your dream. This is the Dig Your Dream Podcast. This Dig Your Dream Podcast is proudly supported by Zone Sports Academy, a 28,000 square foot indoor baseball and softball facility located in Bridgewater, New Jersey. Zone offers professional level training and coaching for individual players and teams and is the home to the Zone Redhawks travel baseball organization. Former players and students have gone on to earn collegiate scholarships and professional contracts, including a 2015 Major League Baseball first round draft pick. So if you are looking to get zoned in and take your game to the next level, now is the time for you to visit zonedinc.com. Hey everyone, and thanks for tuning in to the Dig Your Dream Podcast for Dig Me Discussions interview number 46 with Rutgers University Associate Professor, Licensed Psychologist, Mental Performance Consultant, and Author, Dr. Peter Economo. Dr. Pete, a fellow Seton Hall University alum, takes some time to share his personal journey as a former Division I student athlete and how the experiences of being an elite performer led to a professional career as a clinical psychologist, mental health counselor, and collegiate educator. Dr. Pete talks about his new book, Mindfulness Workbook for Beginners, and shares some tips on how best to cultivate greater positivity and gratitude. He also touches on the pros and cons of social media, why he believes that when screen time goes up, mental health goes down, and offers some tips on how to best embrace your emotions and feel compassion and empathy towards yourself and others. An awesome discussion with a guy who has committed his life's work to mental health and is dedicated to helping others unlock the power of mindfulness. So without further ado, here is Dig Me Discussions interview number 46 with Rutgers University Associate Professor and author, Dr. Peter Economo. What's up, everybody, and welcome back to the Dig Your Dream Podcast for Dig Me Discussions interview number 46 with Dr. Peter Economo from Rutgers University. Pete, thank you so much for joining the show. This is already bringing me back many years and bringing back so many good memories. For all the listeners out there, just a quick tidbit. A long time ago, Pete and I actually shared and roamed the hallways and the halls of Seton Hall University back in the day. So this is really a pleasure and a treat for me just to catch up with you. I've been following you for quite some time. And I just want to say from a fellow Seton Hall alum, what you have accomplished, what you have done over the course of the last 10, 20 years since those days at Seton Hall is just incredibly impressive. And I'm really excited to catch up with you tonight.
Ditto. And I guess we're both each other's fans. So I've been watching you and all that you've been doing and I'm a big fan of Dig Me and all that you do.
Oh, well, I appreciate that, man. I really appreciate that. So our listeners are used to me catching up with some professional or collegiate athletes, some people that are diving into the entrepreneurial or business spaces. But you are a little bit different. And what I want our audience tonight is to not only enjoy this discussion, but to get a ton of value out of it. So before we do, I want to let everyone know that the focus tonight is going to be Dr. Pete's new book, The Mindfulness Workout for Beginners. I picked up my copy. I'm hoping all the listeners, after listening to tonight's episode, are going to do the same. So before we get into this bad boy, why don't you let everyone know a little bit about who you are, where you grew up, a little bit about your backstory long before you are who you are today.
Yeah, it's a boring one. So I'll cut right to the, you know, today I'm teaching at Rutgers University where I direct a couple programs. I found myself a little defensive because I was a Big East champion swimmer, okay. You know, at Olympic trials in 2000. And, you know, also right now clinically work with all high performers. So a lot of what I do is whether it's a professional athlete, CEOs, CFOs, you know, high performing lawyers or any other kind of profession where we tend to get burnt out, which certainly in 2021 kind of be any profession. Yeah. I help them kind of figure that out. And so that was what led me to this book. mindfulness workbook for beginners. And it's a skill that literally will change people's lives. Your listeners have heard this word. There's no doubt. Yeah. Today, when I first started doing this about 15 years ago, people didn't know what it was. So like clients that came to me 15 years ago, I had explained to them what mindfulness was. And now clients are coming to me because this is what they're looking for.
Yeah.
So that's a nice shift. So I wear a couple hats. So licensed psychologist, certified mental performance consultant, board certified in cognitive behavioral therapy, associate professor, team psychologist at Seton Hall University still. So don't forget that. So like you, I wear multiple hats and just thrilled to be here. And I think this is what led into this workbook, which hopefully, and it's $13.49 on Amazon. So it's not like you have to like stretch the bank too much, you know, to find some gems in there.
Absolutely. You know what? And I have it here. I wanted everyone to see it. I'm actually really looking forward to diving in and actually implementing this into my new routine. And I'm going to be honest with you. We had scheduled this podcast a few weeks out. I got this a few weeks ago, but I told myself, I said, you know what? I'm not going to start this until we have this discussion, and I'm going to jump right into it first thing tomorrow morning. So I'm super excited about that and actually implementing all of that stuff. So you did touch on something that I'm sure a lot of the listeners probably, when they hear your title, doctor, you know, psychologist, counselor, you did throw a tidbit out there that you used to be an elite collegiate swimmer, right? You said Olympic qualifiers. In 2000. Let me ask you, before you were a doctor, before you were a psychologist, before you were, you know, helping people understand the importance of mindfulness, where was this word for you as a elite collegiate athlete?
Such a good question, because I say that to my current athletes. So I will say that one of the things I enjoy most about all the hats I wear is working with student athletes. So that 18 to 24-year-old, it's just that emerging adult is such a great opportunity to truly catapult you into wherever you're going, and you'll make mistakes. So that's the other thing that I like. I made mistakes, right? You made mistakes, right? Right.
I like to tell people all the time, I lead the league in making mistakes.
It's a stat that they don't usually report.
Yes.
And so I think it's really a great opportunity so I wish I had someone like me. I say that humbly, because we didn't have that when we were there as student athletes at Seton Hall University, not in the way that we currently do. And that's because we've worked so hard to destigmatize what it means to have a sports psychologist on staff. And frankly, all Power Fives at this point today, as we record this, have at least one, and several of the larger ones have multiple on staff. So I think I was probably practicing a lot of that. I've heard and listened to several of your episodes, and you talk a lot about process, not outcome.
Yeah.
And that's critical. And so I think I understood that back then, but it wasn't packaged in the way that I have now tried to package it for our athletes, and certainly in the book.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, one thing that strikes me is, you know, I like to think sometimes, man, what I would give to have our 4 years in today's sports culture that some of these programs like Rutgers, my God, Big Ten, or Seton Hall University in the Big East, you know, the resources that a lot of these student athletes today have as compared to us. And I think that we had a lot of resources back then too. It wasn't like we were just showing up with, you know, whatever. So, you know, you get past your college days, you're done being an elite collegiate athlete. When did you know that this was the direction that you wanted to take professionally?
It's a funny story. Well, I'll say one thing about the resources. It's true that, you know, we might want to have those resources today, but what we didn't have was social media, which I would not want. You know, I think I got a PhD to help people just realize to put down their phones and delete the apps off their phones. You know,
I don't want to cut you off there with where we're going, but I like the fact you brought up social media. So I have to chime in real quick. Why is that? I want the audience to hear that. Why would you not want social media 20 years ago? And maybe you can kind of, you know, elaborate a little bit as to maybe why you think there are some negatives to either social media or too much of it.
Well, your first mindfulness lesson for the podcast is middle path. You know, so nothing's like good or bad. Everything's somewhere in the middle. And so while I'm presenting social media in the negative light, there are of course benefits to it. You know, some kids that maybe never would get drafted or would never get a scholarship are now being seen. And so, you know, they'll get seen and they'll Absolutely. Potentially get a scholarship. The negative side is we used to have a safe place. You could go back to your dorm, you could go home, and if someone was bothering you or bullying you, or if there was some kind of negative effect that was happening, that wasn't there with you. Mm-hmm. There's no shut off right now.
Yeah.
And so there's almost no safe place. And when you're doing well, sure, it feels great. It's like yeah. so cool to read all the articles. But as you know, as an elite performer yourself, we don't do well 100% of the time.
No.
So when the negative stuff starts to roll out, you know, like the hashtag, like you suck, or like, you know, get you off, you know, yeah. cut him. Yeah. That has a negative effect on people's mental health and well-being.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And how much do you think that the time spent on social media could be a negative as well too? Listen, I am someone, like you said, you know, we haven't spoken in quite some time, but I feel as though I see what you're doing quite a bit, and I'm sure you do with me
exactly.
as well. Because of the power of our smartphones and social media.
Right.
I will admit that I enjoy it, but there are also times that I say to myself, man, that was maybe a little too much time today, especially yeah. as a husband and a father and an aspiring entrepreneur. So
yeah.
where's the negative in time spent on social media?
Same place. And so screen time, or for Android users, there's apps for that. Like there are resources to use to try and manage and limit. We know as screen time goes up, you know, mental health goes down, well-being goes down, you know. And so what we do in mindfulness is like, look, I go down rabbit holes every so often because everyone does.
Yeah.
And I'm aware of when I'm doing it. So I'm either giving myself permission and doing it with compassion, or I'm setting a limit as I'm in it, saying like, all right, 5 more minutes of just this rabbit hole. Let me see where this, you know, person I used to know is doing now, or kind of, you know, you could just go, you know, these dance videos or, you know, top plays or whatever it is that you go for, just allow yourself to do it.
Yeah.
But be sure to set a limit on it. And so there are, you know, another middle path thing is these apps are made to pull you in so that you use it more. Mm-hmm. And then now we have apps to help us stay away from it.
Yeah.
So it's a little like, it's a tug of war.
Yeah.
If we can try and win that tug of war, we're probably going to feel better on the outside.
Yeah, I agree with you. And I think that was kind of striking what you just said. So when screen time goes up, mental health goes down. So let me ask you this. Like I said, I want to come across as a listener who is, it's my first time. I'm listening to Dr. Pete and I'm like, I want to make a change. I want to start implementing some positive behavior. If screen time goes up, mental health goes down, what would you suggest would be a positive alternative to less screen time?
Well, I mean, anything, mm-hmm. like anything off of a device. So you could go outside for a walk. You could take your daughter to go play catch. You know, you could go golfing. You could just have a conversation with somebody. You know, I think especially like as we're waning out of this, you know, pandemic, we've been so attached with devices.
Yeah.
TVs, computers, you know, whatever it is. So just something that's like probably, you know, not involving some sort of technology. Technology is great.
Yes.
But just set aside some time where you're not using it. So I think just that's a positive step for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I had some coaches I work with in my pro career and some, you know, health and fitness people throughout the course of my career. And a lot of athletes are always focused on their diet, you know, because they're trying to get bigger and stronger. And, you know, sometimes some of these coaches or dietitians, everything is so complicated. And I remember I had one coach, one health and fitness guy that basically said, listen, you're so caught up in what you're eating. Just remember, something that you like, enjoy it. But if you have too much of it, it's bad for you, right?
That's right.
So the same applies to social media. The same applies, you know, probably to a lot of the things that we can maybe let get out of hand. You said something else that caught my attention. Have a conversation with somebody.
Yeah.
Is a conversation with somebody different than a text conversation on your phone?
100%.
Absolutely it is, right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
So does that mean that you should ask a friend to meet them at the coffee shop, or is it actually getting on your smartphone and talking instead of texting?
I mean, how awkward is it when you call somebody?
Oh my gosh. I'll admit it. I actually don't feel comfortable. And I know that if my family listens to this episode, which I hope they do, I know my mom and dad and my sisters and my brother are all going to roll their eyes because I'm the guy in the family that never calls.
Yeah.
But I'll text.
Yeah.
I just hate the phone.
Yeah. I mean, it's easier. And if I have multiple jobs and I'm not, you know, and I am enjoying what I'm doing, it's definitely easier. I mean, I also enjoy a text here and there. I'll tell you the first thing I do when I'm on a group text, silence it.
Really?
The first thing I do.
Really?
Because it'll be there. It's yeah, I don't need the notification.
Yeah, no, you're right. You're right. Absolutely.
And if there's more than three or four people on there, it's already going off too much. Yeah. So I immediately silence it.
Yeah, smart. So let's dive into Mindfulness Workbook for Beginners.
Yes.
Okay. This week we're going to drop this episode. I'm already super excited about it. There's a one listener or 100 or 1,000 listeners, and they've never even made an attempt yet to work on their mental health, to implement any of these positive mental practices. And it's because they're overwhelmed. They just think, it's too much, or, that's too fancy, or, only some of my kind of friends might do something like that. So what are your first or most important tips for someone who really has never made an attempt to embrace the importance of working on their mental health?
Well, the thing I do clinically or just when I'm coaching somebody, because I'm usually working with healthy people who want to improve.
Yeah.
That's the luxury of my current role. It's beautiful, frankly, because I get to see people really flourish, they reach their potential. So the first thing is that anything that is related to mindfulness is born out of Zen Buddhism. And Zen Buddhism's first noble truth is that everyone suffers. So for you to say like a listener may not have ever dealt with their mental health or may have not have taken that step, what I'm going to say is everybody on this planet has at some point had a moment where they've reflected on how they don't feel great. Mm. Most people have lost somebody. Most people have lost an animal. Most people have not gotten a promotion, not gotten a job, gotten fired. Yeah. All these things have happened to all of us. And so once I can accept that everybody suffers, and then I can then commit to some more like healthier living. And that's really where mindfulness comes in. But what I will say is I meet people where they're at. Mm-hmm. And so I think from the coaching perspective of this, and I tried to do this in the book, not everyone's ready for it. So I've said like everyone on this planet would benefit from a mindfulness practice. It'd be like a much calmer, peaceful place, but not everyone will do it. And that's okay.
Yeah.
But if you just take one step, and so I think acknowledging that everyone suffers, there's a famous kind of meme I'm sure that everyone has seen that says pain is inevitable, suffering is optional.
Yeah.
So we all have pain, but I choose to suffer. And that's really hard for people to understand, but I'll just like leave that there and like let that percolate for a listener.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is, that's extremely powerful. Absolutely. Yeah. You said, maybe they're not ready.
Yeah.
When is somebody ready for this?
I mean, when it's that time, it's in Zen. When I first started my Zen meditation journey, I sat down with my teacher and I was like, it basically said, hey, you're an academic. I'm an academic. How do I become the best Zen meditator that there is?
Yeah.
Because that's what academics, that's what high performers do. We want to be the best at whatever we do.
Yep.
And his reply was just, you're exactly where you need to be. And I was, of course I rolled my eyes a little bit and I was just like, I didn't know what that meant. Listeners will probably roll their eyes a little bit. Now knowing what I know today, we're all exactly where we need to be. So you're ready when you're ready.
Yep.
There's no perfect way to do it. There's no right way to do it. It's just at least committing to doing it.
Yeah, you're right. Just committing to doing it. Now the months are flying by now, especially as a parent, they're flying by. But I recently made a professional pivot a few months ago, and I am now in the financial advising space, and I work with some very, very talented, passionate people, some very high performers. Yeah. And I've been introduced to mindfulness and coaching, because some of those performers in my office have committed to this practice and they work with coaches because they want to be the best in their business, in their industry, to your point, right? How important do you think coaching is for the average person, for any type of job, whether they're a high-performing athlete in college or the professional level, somebody who works in corporate America, somebody who may be a self-employed entrepreneur? Do you think that most people, all people, some people would benefit if they had professional coaching?
Well, I mean, that comes to just economics of it, obviously. Yeah. I mean, so the higher performing successful people can afford it and they want it. And that's fine.
Yeah. Right?
That's, you know, but you don't need it. I mean, I think what you do need is community, you know, sort of like a team, right? Like you can't win a baseball game without a team.
That's for sure.
Right. So I think that's the only thing I would want listeners to think about. And so again, I don't ever like instruct people where to go, but just look for where you might be able to go.
Yeah.
So there might be like a yoga studio in your neighborhood that does some mindfulness training, or, you know, you might find us, it's called a Sangha in any kind of Buddhist meditation world, which just means community. So maybe just looking for what resources are out there, or a book like in the opening of this book, Mindfulness Workbook for Beginners, we talk a lot about, I just introduced the reader to, this is not meant to be therapy. It's meant to be an adjunct to therapy, or if you've already gone through therapy, this really might help kind of bolster, you know, your understanding also, or coach, so like therapy or coaching. But, you know, I don't think it's not necessary to have a coach by any means. I mean, in the world of finance, you know, it's a lot of my New York office, you know, because it's a high stress job.
Yes.
You know, and the hours are insane. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, it's, I always like reflect on billions on Showtime.
Yeah, of course.
Right. So the psychiatrist there, that's what her job was, Wendy Rhodes, right? Was to help people perform as optimally as possible. So there was actually, there was a psychologist in New York that sued Showtime claiming that they wrote Wendy Rhodes' based character off of her.
Oh my gosh.
That's like, are you proud of that? Are you actually making a lawsuit on that?
Amazing.
Yeah.
So you talk about, you know, like you don't necessarily need a coach, but you need community. So what if there is someone out there that says, hey, listen, Dr. Pete, I'm all in. Like I want to make this jump. I want to make this commitment, but financially, my financial resources may not allow me to hire a coach, may not allow me to go to therapy, but I do want to start. Where does somebody who right now, especially after what has been a really, really difficult year financially, and of course we know health-wise for most of our country, they're concerned about their financial resources, but they do want to take the first step towards working on their mental health. What is your advice for them, how they can move forward?
There's lots of free resources. So, I mean, there's lots of websites. There's like one of the organizations, the Association of Contextual Behavioral Sciences, ACBS, they've got tons of resources out there. Russ Harris has some really great books, Pema Chodron, Thich Nhat Hanh. I mean, there are so many good resources out there on the web. I mean, my clinical website even has like free tutorials of like how to do this stuff. Again, the books are not terribly expensive. And I'm sure that they could find a community where, you know, so when I went to my teacher first, it was just like, you know, entire group of people, that's it. And through that is where I really deepened my meditation practice.
Yeah.
So there's a lot out there. So get creative, think outside the box, notice if you're feeling frustrated or like stuck, and just, again, commit to doing it.
Yeah, absolutely. The key word so far in this discussion I keep hearing is the word commit.
Commit.
And it is true. You know, I'm a big believer, if you commit to something, you're going to see some results. Let's touch on the word or the practice of meditation. You just, just threw that word out there. Hopefully I'll make you smile a little bit. I have just recommitted, and I say recommitted because there have been a couple of times in my life I was introduced to meditation during my professional baseball career, did it for a little bit, you know, got away for quite some time, but I am re-implementing it into my morning daily routine.
Beautiful.
Talk a little bit about meditation, why you do it, why you practice it, and what are the benefits? You know, I have some people I just recently told that I am meditating now daily. And some of them are like, wow, you know, I do it also. And I've seen such a, you know, such a positive change in my life. And then I have people in my circle, I tell them that I'm meditating and they start laughing at me like I'm just like losing my mind. So talk a little bit about meditation and why you feel, you know, it is such an important practice and can be very beneficial for many people.
Well, I'll plug, I mean, I have a podcast, When East Meets West, and we do a lot of the science of mindfulness or meditation. And I think that so there's tons of benefits of it. So my brain changes, like the hippocampus, the amygdala, the gray matter actually gets more dense, which just means that my neurons can fire in a more effective way. So it means I'm going to think before I speak. But if I do bicep curls, I'm going to see my bicep get bigger, like, and probably like within, I don't know, like 2 weeks or so, like I'll see a difference. I don't see that. This isn't tangible when it comes to meditation. So I think for high performers in particular, it's really hard because we want to see the outcome.
Yes.
And as much as I might drill home process the outcome, and I might know that intellectually, still emotionally, if I'm committing to something that I don't see an actual measurable change, it reduces stress. It'll improve cardiovascular health, decreases hypertension. Again, all things that are not super tangible. So what I'll say is, first of all, your introduction to baseball, you know, baseball is the sport. The advent of this is really golf, but then second to golf was baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, baseball has really embraced mental skills training more than any other sport aside from golf, I'll say. I also find myself thinking if everyone meditated, that is the best route to a mindful life. It's just really hard. Yeah. And one of my teachers, she once told me a story where she was like, sometimes I just can't wait to get on the cushion. And when I first started meditating, I was like, what is she like? That's some like hippie. Like, I don't get that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And like now fast forward 15 plus years, I'm like, oh, okay. Now I get it. Like, and it takes that much time. Like this is a lifelong commitment. It's not something that happens overnight. I often say to clients, like start with when you're brushing your teeth, like that could be meditation. So while it's helpful to sit still on a cushion in a place that is separate from anything else.
Yeah.
You don't want to do it in your bed. You don't want to do it at your desk where you work. You know, if that's the only option you have, you want to do it at the foot of your bed, or you want to turn your back to your like computer screen, but you really want to have like a space that's committed just to that. You want a certain amount of time, you know, and I say what else in the gym could you commit to for like 3 to 5 minutes a day and have it like, and then have it show some kind of outcome?
Oh, easy. I'm doing it again. Cause I'm feeling better. Jump rope.
Okay.
Time, yeah. Right. So jump rope. Yeah.
So that's one. Is there a second one?
3 to 5 minutes. I mean, of course you can hop on the treadmill and do some, you know, like some sprints
or something. Yep. So and that would be better than nothing.
Yeah, of
course. But is that going to change my amygdala? Is that going to change like parts of my brain? You know, the benefits are so immense for meditation, but it's hard to do. And I think that's just the take home message of, again, we'll say this thing about committing to it. And I really literally start with 1 minute actually.
Yeah.
People, just one, that's fine. And then build up next day, maybe two, or next week, two or three. But if you can ultimately get to like, you know, 5 to 10 minutes, that will have such an impact on, you know, on your life in a way that I think nothing has had such a tremendous impact on my own personal life or all the people that I've been blessed to work with.
That's incredible. You know, and that actually gets me excited because I've been really committing, right? That's the key word tonight. Yeah. I've been really committing to like re-engineering my daily habits, especially my morning habits, because, you know, I don't want to sound too sentimental, but you know, you've known me for a lot of years. I've always been a passionate guy, but it's a different outlook on life now when you become a husband, when you become a father.
Sure.
And I'm looking to become the highest performer that I've ever been, right? I've kind of flirted with being a high performer in sports and in business, but I really do want to get to the next level. So here I am, I'm re-engineering my daily routine. And I'll be honest, I've been excited about meditating. I challenge myself every morning to to do it for 10 minutes. And some days I feel like the 10 minutes I dominate it. And then other days, a minute or two in, I find myself struggling, you know, to concentrate and focus and be still. But I do feel the benefits of it already.
Well, let me give you a little lesson there if I can.
Yeah, of course.
A little in vivo lesson there. Non-judgment.
Yeah, of course.
So you have to not judge yourself. So you never want to be like, I killed that 10 minutes or that was tough.
Yeah.
Because it's not a competition.
Yeah.
You know, the stillness is so loud that the goal is just to be still. That's it. There's actually no other goal other than just to sit and be still. You know, and like all relationships in our life, there's ups and downs.
Yeah.
With the relationship with meditation.
Yeah. Wow.
Sometimes I want it and it's great and it's strong and unbreakable. Other times I'm like hanging on by a thread and not sure if it's going to be around tomorrow.
Yeah. You know, it's incredible to think that the goal is to sit and be still.
That's
and
it.
Something so simple as being still can be so powerful in your well-being and your health. It's just really incredible to me.
Well, Eckhart Tolle, I think his second or third book was titled Stillness Speaks, you know, because I think most people that I work with, when they go in the car, when they get home, one of the first things they do is turn on the music or turn on TV.
Yeah.
We are so afraid of silence. And I think myself, I realized that, you know, like as I started my journey of like, I was that person. I would always come home and turn the TV on or what game, just have something on in the background.
Yeah.
Try not to do that.
Wow.
Try to drive without anything. Shut your phone off. Don't have any. It's hard. Because again, I think it is really hard to be still. But the stillness is what actually has the impact that we're looking for.
Wow. I think that's, I'm hopeful that all the listeners take that challenge this week and over the next few weeks to really challenge themselves to be still, to have some more quiet and just kind of see what that feels like. And I'm sure the results are going to be nothing but positive. I want to ask you quickly. First of all, I can't believe it's almost, you know, it's been 20 plus years since we used to roam the halls and the green of Seton Hall University. But, you know, just looking back, you know, we were both collegiate athletes. We were both doing our thing as student athletes on campus. You know, I don't remember hearing the topic about mental health as much then as you do over the last couple of years. So my first question is, why do you think that is? What has happened? What has happened in our culture, in our country, that now there is so much focus on mental health, which I think is a good thing. But why weren't we focused on mental health as a community and a country 20, 30, 40 years ago? Or were we, and did I just happen to miss it during my teenage, early 20 years? Was I not paying attention?
Well, I think a little bit of both. You know, I think that 18 to 22 year old brain, it is not always paying attention. I think it depends on your teammates, the culture that was created by, you know, coaches, the university. I mean, there's so many variables that go into it. But the two main answers to your questions are destigmatization and awareness.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so I'll have people be like, well, autism, like, it just seems like we're overdiagnosing it or something's going wrong or it's the vaccinations. It's like, okay, no, all of that is actually wrong. And what it is we are more aware. Our science is better. Yeah. You know, it's kind of like, why can we detect certain things with like PET scans or MRIs or imaging that we couldn't ever 20 years ago?
Yeah.
You know, we've been doing open heart surgery for 100 years. We've only just started imaging the brain in the last 20. So to put that in perspective for your listeners is like, we really neurologically don't understand anything, frankly, you know? And so I think awareness is that we're raising awareness to the impacts that it has on all of us. And then the destigmatization. And that's what I've been really passionate about, is just trying to work towards normalizing. And so that's why, like, my roles with the universities or the professional teams I work with, is I'm just with the coaches.
Yeah.
Right, or with the orthos, or with the chiropractor, the PT, whoever's there, the dietitian, you know, whoever's there on staff in that moment, those are the people that I'm with, because I'm just another person, I'm just another coach in a way.
Yeah.
And that's really helped, you know, and I could think of moments where after large, you know, basketball or football games, being in a locker room and like you know, one of the top athletes being like, Dr. Pete, I'm going to need me some therapy after this one. And that literally was the moment that then I saw that person the next week.
Yeah.
So just little things like that have really made the access just so much more available. And again, I think, you know, some of these athletes, there's a spectrum. You know, some of them are really unwell. You know, we could find, you know, some more intense resources for them. But others are just suffering, and then they just need a couple tools to learn how to get out of that.
Yeah.
And that's where we come in. Is like, and the other thing I'll say is, going back to one of your questions before about the coaching, my job is to not have a job. And that's what I tell every client or athlete I work with when I come in. I don't want to work for people with people forever. Because the goal is that we have like skills to give the person tools to work with so that they don't have to need me, pay me, and they can just go on and live life with these tools.
That's awesome. So basically when that player or that client or that patient, when it's time for them to leave, you know you have done your job. And
that's right.
That's amazing, right? Your goal, right? You don't want to have a job.
That's right.
Pretty well put. That's incredible. Yeah. Yeah. Listen, a few more minutes if you don't mind, and then I'm going to get out of here. I do want to ask you a couple of maybe not mindfulness questions. As you know, ever since I left Seton Hall University, I was very fortunate to play 14 years of professional baseball at a very, very high level. It was a dream come true. And somewhere in the middle of that journey, I decided that I wanted to start my own little business as well too. So I am still currently an aspiring entrepreneur. Although you kind of can see it, you're actually wearing one of our t-shirts, and I'm super grateful that you are. Yes, there you go. I love it. So I just wanted to ask, you know, Dr. Pete, just your thoughts as somebody who has seen what we've attempted to build over the years. What do you think about Digny, you know, from afar and what you've seen over the years?
Well, the messaging is beautiful. You know, I think, you know, kudos to you. And I think it's live, dream, be. I mean, it's really about, and I think that's one of the things we do in mindfulness or just behavioral, like performance psychology, is being, you know, can you just be courage? Can you be still? You know, can you kind of take this dream that you have and just be it, you know? And I think as simple as that might sound, it's kind of like Nike's like, just do it. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like everyone's like, oh, it is just really about that. And so I love the messaging. I of course love the style of it. It's like a loaded question, though. I don't know how much more you want me to
know. Listen, you made my day with that answer, because my next part of the question is, you know, like you said, like anything you were talking earlier about, you know, like relationships, you know, relationships are not easy. You have your challenges, you have your good, you have your bad. It's like a roller coaster. The same for our journey, building Digny. And there have been times I would be lying if I said that there weren't times where I said, you know, it's got the best of me. It's not working. We're not going to get over to the other side. You know, we're not going to get over the hump. You know, maybe it's time. It was a good run.
Yeah.
And then I'll be out with my wife and I'll be wearing one of my hats and somebody says, dude, that hat's incredible. Or I'll ask you, somebody like yourself, what do you think about Digny? And you give me that answer, which makes me want to do it again for another 10, 20 years. So basically what I'm getting at is, whether it's myself, maybe someone that you've worked with as a patient, and they've been working on a project and they say, hey, Dr. Pete, listen, I'm thinking about giving up.
Yeah.
You know, for anyone out there, is there a right time? You know, is there a right time to cut the cord? Or if you just really believe in it, you keep it alive in some capacity somehow.
Well, there's no right or wrong. We've learned that today.
Yeah.
But what I would do with that person is help them explore their values and just really identify what their values are in this moment. Values change. So you started Digny based on the values of, what's it been, like 10 plus years?
How many years? Is it? Well, 15 years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So 15 years ago, Ray, you know, it's kind of like I would ask you today to be like, what would you tell that 15 years ago Ray self?
Yeah.
You know, and as silly as that might sound, it's really trying to, like, I want that will help listeners realize that we change, and change is okay. We don't usually want it. And so if you can think about what your values are today, that will make your decision.
Yeah.
So that's what we do in this work, is like, why am I doing what I'm doing? no matter what it is. Why did I pivot to finance?
Yeah.
You know, why do I move across the country or across the, you know, the globe?
Yeah.
You know, asking ourselves the why and being able to determine that will give us all the answers that we need. There's nothing else we need other than underneath, other than what's underneath that.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. And, you know, part of what makes me feel good, part of what makes me think that, or at least feeds my mental health, is doing things that I truly love and that I'm passionate about. And I know some people look at success as maybe, you know, a certain level of monetary success, yeah, or certain material things. And all of that is good to a point.
Sure.
But you can be successful without making a ton of money. You can be successful without accumulating a ton of material things. And I've always said that my Dig Me project has just, it feeds my soul. And there are just enough people out there that will send a really nice message, or they'll send an email after they get their order in the mail, that just make me say, you know what, whether we turn out to be a brand that generates millions in revenue or no millions in revenue, if it makes me feel good and I know there, yeah, are a few people out there that believe in it, I'll do it forever.
And that's beautiful. And that's the thing that you, that's what you then, you piggyback on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. We're going to get you out of here. Couple last quick questions. And I'm going to save my last question about the book and maybe some tips for our audience. Mm-hmm. Cause I have a feeling some of these listeners are going to want to get right into doing stuff like this right after they hear the episode. But as you notice, you are a guest tonight on the Dig Your Dream podcast, which of course is inspired by the guy in the tie right there. We call it the Dig Your Dream podcast very easily because I ask all of our guests, what is the next big dream that you're digging for? So Dr. Pete, you've accomplished so much. You are helping so many. What's left for you? What's left that you are working hard to do? And what is your ultimate dream, your next big dream that you're digging for, or something really big that you're trying to accomplish? What's the big goal?
My answer is going to be terrible. Can I?
Of course, please.
It's just peace. You know, there's nothing monetary, there's nothing title. I mean, I think one of the things that I say a lot is when I die, everything that I've accomplished dies with me. You know, I mean, you know, we all want to leave legacy, but truthfully, legacies last for maybe a generation or so. Mm-hmm. You know, again, I'm not saying that just like that's going to sound negative to some people.
I get it.
Yeah, I'm saying that to be realistic. And because what we do in mindfulness is we just really enjoy this moment. Because that's all we have. You know, all of our anxiety is based on something that we're fearing in the future or that we're holding on to from the past. So I don't need any more like degrees. I'll do other projects. Yeah. You know, my colleague and I who do the, you know, When East Meets West podcast, like it's just because we want to educate the world, you know, because again, yeah, like we're expensive, you know, and so can we do these little tidbits of like things that are out there to help people deconstruct what's going on in their minds, because their mind is a really busy thing. So I think for me, it would just be like digging deeper into my peace and just really being sure that I have a, you know, certainty, strength, and like stability in all of that inner peace.
You know, that's one hell of a dream to be digging for. I think most people lose sight of just how incredible of a goal that is to accomplish. A lot of people search their whole lives for peace and they're not able to get it. So I think I think your answer was spot on and perfect. So I'm going to put you on the spot before I get you out of here. So this is your book, which by the way, I just want everyone to know, when you posted this, I, along with probably so many people that follow you, went on Amazon, picked it up. And like I said, I waited until we were going to catch up tonight for me to jump in this. And I was perusing through it before we hopped on. I'm like super excited to not only read it, but to, you know, fill in the answers and write the stories and do all the practices that are in there. So, mindfulness workshop for beginners. Okay. I'm a listener. Dr. Pete, this was awesome. This was a great discussion with Ray from Dig Me. I really enjoyed it. I want to get after it. Tomorrow morning's my first day after listening to the episode. Can you give me three or four or five tips that I can just do to start. Is the first one buy the book? Is that the first tip?
I would give the book out, and I do. Just contact me. But you have to have the book to try and do it. A few little tips. One, beginner's mind. Everything we do is a new moment, and so trying to think and see things through that lens allows us to do it with clarity. Middle path, nothing is black and white, so try and find the gray in what you're doing. Non-judgment, just notice how often you judge both what you're doing, the people around you are doing, what you're thinking and how you're feeling. Just create space for all of that. And lastly, just follow your values. You may not know what that means. You may have heard me say that to you earlier, but just Google that, take a look, and see if you can maybe explore what your values mean to you today in this moment, because they've likely changed and they will change, and that's okay.
Yeah. I'm excited. I know our listeners are going to be excited about this. I haven't had any of our guests on twice. I think I might have had one or two. It's been, like I said, it's been about 3 years since we started, but I don't want to put you on the spot, but I might. I'm going to go through this. I am going to work hard at this. When I get done with this, and I know it's a lifelong commitment, but when done with this workbook, maybe we can have you on for a quick 10, 15 minute one. And we can talk about, my experience, using this book and implementing a lot of this into my life. I have a feeling that I'm going to be a much healthier, more positive, higher performer person when I'm done reading it.
I'd love to. I hope you also incorporate it in your parenting, because I think if every parent had this, and can instill this in their children, that's the one thing I reflect on. We were reflecting on our time at Seton Hall. I wish my parents would have had some of this.
Wow.
And what life would have been like in that house. So I'd be happy to come back. And only if you give me your challenges, though. I don't want to hear how good it was. I want to hear where you got stuck.
No, absolutely. And that is fair. And absolutely. I'm going to hold you to it. Hopefully it'll be sooner than later. But Dr. Pete, honestly, this was amazing, and I'm already thinking about some things. Not that I forgot to ask, but I know there's so much more that we can touch on. So I think a part two of this would just be really, really awesome. Listen, man, it's been great. I can't believe it's been 20 years. I'll leave you with this, though. I know we're getting older, but I don't necessarily feel it yet. Maybe I'm being delusional or stubborn, but I still think we have some of our best years are ahead of us.
I sure do.
And I just want to thank you, for all that you're doing for so many. And I want to thank you for your time tonight. I'm going to look forward to dropping this episode later on in the week. And I know that we're in the kind of similar area. So we got to get together sometime soon.
Live, dream, be. Thanks for having me, Ray.
Absolutely. Dr. Pete, I appreciate it, man. We'll be in touch. All the best.
Meditation is a lifelong commitment. It's not something that happens overnight. The goal is to sit and be still. The stillness is what actually has the impact that we are looking for. You have to not judge yourself. Such simple words that hold so much power. Hearing Dr. Pete talk about the importance of mindfulness really drives home how important our mental health is and why we all must take the time to protect and nurture it. So if you are ready to take the next step in improving your mental health and are ready to begin implementing some mindfulness practices, please be sure to check out Dr. Pete's new book, Mindfulness for Beginners, now available on Amazon. For all of you Dr. Pete Economou, Seton Hall University, and Rutgers University fans out there who may be interested in checking out our DigMe brand, please use special promo code DigMePE21 at checkout to save 30% off your next DigMe purchase. That's DigMePE21 and save 30% off when you bring home the guy in the tie. Sending a very special thank you to Dr. Pete Economou for taking the time to come on the show and share his story and passion, but more importantly, to committing his life's work to helping guide so many to a healthier state of mind. And thank you to all of you who continue to tune in each and every week to the Dig Your Dream podcast, the official podcast show of The Guy in the Tie. I'm your host, Ray Digme. Until next time, you know what you have to do. Go on, get out there, tip your cap, and dig your dreams.